and the time is 6 a.m.
This is CKUW 95.9 FM, streaming at ckuw.ca. We hope you've enjoyed listening to us, and stay tuned. CKUW is managed by the Winnipeg Campus Community Radio Society in accordance with CRTC and Industry Canada rules and regulations. As a not-for-profit station, CKUW is a member of the National Campus Community Radio Association and adheres to their statement of principles to provide an alternative voice. CKUW operates on a frequency of 95.9 MHz on the FM band with 450 watts effective radiated power, or ERP. Our transmitter is located at 7 Evergreen Place in Osborne Village. Programming originates from our downtown studios at the University of Winnipeg in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. We would like to hear from you and welcome your ideas to improve listening, which will be heard on CKUW in years to come. Address your comments and suggestions to CKUW 95.9 FM, Room 4, CM11, at 515 Portage Avenue, Winnipeg, Manitoba, R3B2E9. You can also call 204-786-9782 or email us at ckuw@uwinnipeg.ca. This is Seamus Hamilton Pattison speaking for the Board of Directors, staff, and volunteers of CKUW 95.9 FM. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for more great community radio.
This is CKUW 95.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Winnipeg, Manitoba, on occupied Anishinaabe Aking, the homeland of the Métis and the historical territory of the Nahiyawak and the Nakota.
Good morning, friends. I'm Ron Robinson.
And I'm Carol.
We are here. We are the Saturday morning show here for you for the next 2 hours, 6 until 8, from a small, dark, warm room.
It is warm in here.
On the fourth and a half floor of the University of Winnipeg. We're glad. This half hour, we'll send Carol up on the roof. But we'll tie a rope to her so we have to bring her back. Looking.
I don't know if I want to go up there.
I'll do it. I'll do it for you, don't. Sit there and knit would be good, and I'll head up on the roof looking for ancient radio waves. We've got our easy listening hit parade. Carol McKibben has the weather. Oh, yes. And Carol, I have one word to say to you.
Yes.
Typewriters.
Oh, interesting.
Right, you are 2 minutes, 3 minutes after six now. Well, we dressed appropriately, is all I have to say. And it was a bit of a breeze as we came off onto Portage Avenue, but really, we live here by choice.
And
if you'd watched, not so much Riley, but whoever was filling in on CBC there, does the weather. It wasn't snow apocalypse, but it was the cold.
You know what? He just said it was very cold. I was listening, watching Good Morning Britain yesterday, where it was bitterly cold.
Which means.
5 degrees.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think it was going to, maybe it was going to -7 overnight somewhere. But in any case, for most of the place, 5 degrees. And for us, it's very cold. It was probably -20 yesterday.
Right. Well, just before you do the weather.
Yes, yeah.
A big obituary in today's Winnipeg Free Press for Ted Allen and his wife. Ted Allen, who's the author, writer, Free Press, Winnipeg Magazine, etc. And the cry heard in the ears of travel agents in Winnipeg down through the ages, get me somewhere warm.
Yes.
And so he ended up in South Africa, where I think his wife-to-be was in a convent school or something. Bingo,
what?
Bingo. It's all there. It's in today's Winnipeg Free Press. Okay. Ted Allen and Dawn, I think, was his wife's first name.
All right.
604, Carol McKibben.
Well, when I switched to the weather, before I renewed it, it was on last Saturday's weather, and it was -1.
Those were the days we thought they'd
Today, there is an extreme cold warning, and it's -28. And it's clear, and we forgot to look for the... there was some kind of falling stars out there tonight, night.
Catch a falling star, put it in your
pocket. We forgot.
Save it for...
In any case, barometric pressure, 104.1 and rising. That's good. Humidity, 77%. Wind coming from the northwest at 12. And the wind chill, -37. Does that mean you have to check the furnace at the side of the house?
If it's coming
from the northwest?
We probably should. A couple of days at minus 30 and with a 30 clicks.
You said it has to be a certain direction, though.
Northwest is absolutely
northwest.
Right.
Northwest, okay.
And then the frost fills in the intake pipe and the furnace stops. And the house slowly gets colder.
Well, the other day...
And I say,
yes,
I'm just going outside. I may be some time. Yeah, you can look that up. Famous quote.
Yes.
Famous quote. 605.
The other day, you were a little bit tired and complainy to me because it had been overcast for days on end. And I said to you, there's a choice, Ron. You can have warm weather, which is like minus five, minus one, and have it overcast, or, like today, minus 28 and sunny.
Well,
so it's going to be sunny today.
There you are.
Wind up to 15 kilometers. The high today, minus 21. Wind chill, minus 40 this morning, minus 28 this afternoon. And you know what that means, Ron.
No, Carol, what does that mean?
Frostbite in minutes.
Oh, that's right. That's
yes.
true.
Yep.
Ow. Yes. White, bad, red, indicative of do something.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, 6:06, and just before we have a turn to something a little lighter, we'll turn to our age. Doesn't matter unless you're a cheese. Two quotes for you here. Every human being on this earth is born with a tragedy. He's born with the tragedy that he has to grow up. He's lost everything that is lovely and must fight for a new loveliness of its own making. And it's a tragedy. A lot of people don't have the courage to do it. So said actress Helen Hayes.
Oh.
Talk about remaking. Well, actresses, you know. All of us fail to match our dreams of perfection. So I rate us on the basis of our splendid failure to do the impossible, said William Faulkner. That's a little more direct than
okay.
usual, I think. 6:07. Turning then to...
Your easy listening hit parade.
The 40s and 50s. Teresa Brewer, a little girl with a big voice, as Ed Sullivan was fond of introducing her on his show, True, astounded people with her energy from the beginning of her career. Probably came by it honestly back in those days, too. Yes.
Don't let the stars get in your eyes, don't let the moon break your heart. Love blooms at night, in daylight it dies. Don't let the stars get in your eyes, oh, keep your heart from me, for someday I'll return and you know you're
that's
the
Perry
something,
Como
something about that doesn't sound like
Perry
Teresa
Como
Brewer.
Trying to do his Teresa Brewer imitation, and you know, Perry, I wasn't there for you. Needs work, I think, is what we want to hear. I may have even had this as a 45. Now I have to think about this.
Till I waltz again with you, let no other hold your charms. If my dreams should all come true, you'll be waiting for my arms till I kiss you once again. Keep my love locked in your heart, darling, I'll return and then we will never have to part. Till I waltz again with you, just the way we are tonight, I will keep my promise true, for you are my guiding light. Till I waltz again with you, I waltz again with you. Just the way we are tonight, I will keep my promise true. For you are my guiding light, my light, my light. I will keep my promise true till I waltz again with you.
Teresa Brewer, a little help from her production side, the producer there, that some of those notes went right to the back of your skull, did they not? I realize now, yes. What I had was Would I Were, was a 45 by Teresa Brewer that I bought from Ray Hamerton's record store, which is on the corner of Fort and Portage, where the big Royal Bank is now.
Oh.
When I look at that corner.
Yes, that's what you see.
Superimposed on it, yes.
Wow.
And actually, I ended up...
That's just a block from Portage and Maine.
That's right.
Right, okay.
At a big record sale I don't go to very often. Everybody had a table, and I may have even spent $2 and I got carried away. It was an autographed LP by Teresa Brewer.
Wow.
Yep.
What happened to the 45?
Buried.
Oh, I thought maybe a cousin walked off of it.
Well, no, I did. Funny you should say that. Tommy Edwards.
Yes.
I took it to school when... I don't know why our teacher would wanting to let us play 45s, but I was never got home.
Oh, dear.
Teresa Brewer, Till I Waltz Again With You. She began singing on radio in Toledo at the age of 2.
Oh.
Listeners thought it was a hoax. In 1950, when she was 19, first smash million seller, Music, 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 followed 3 years later by Till I Waltz Again With You. She always managed to hammer couple of notes in each of those songs. Number one hit, her second gold record. She put more than a dozen hits on the charts in the 50s, including Ricochet, probably I Don't Want a Ricochet Romance, I Don't Want a Love, yes. Mm. Let Me Go Lover, Let Me Go, Let Me Go. A Tear Fell and A Sweet Old Fashioned Girl, both in 1956.
Aw.
612. Well, we didn't get our paper, so we'll have to see if we can look the jumble up online, I guess, but I'm looking at an obituary for Johnny Walker. No, not that Johnny Walker.
Oh, okay.
This is a former pirate radio disc jockey. Went to Radio 1, later became a stalwart. Radio 2. Picture of him here alongside the Ross Revenge, the ship from which Radio Carolyn made its broadcast from 1983 to 1990.
Huh.
BBC had a hate on for rock and roll, had to protect tender young ears. So Radio Luxembourg used to beam radio signals in, and the pirates got these old rickety, sinking, floating tubs just outside the 3 mile range, I think. And you could sit in these things and broadcast into Britain, you see.
Okay.
Yeah, he's one of four pirate DJs, and the others, we remember John Peel, Tony Blackburn, Kenny Everett, the tragic Kenny Everett. You would play him from time to time with, hello, 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 hello.
Oh, right.
Hello, 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 goodbye. Yes, he did some fine sound things on radio. So, Radio Carolyn, I guess the most famous. But they eventually, the Marine Offenses Act of 67 brought an end to the prosecution, Free Pirate Radio. And so Peel, Everett, and Blackburn, among the DJs who abandoned the rusting boats, and signed on at BBC. Radio 1 launched that September to meet the demand the pirate stations had identified. He was actually born as Peter Dingley. And,
interesting.
He joined Swinging Radio England. Changed his name to Johnny Walker. Natural, laconic, but warm. BBC One, well, Radio One, brought him into conflict with management, become enamored with top 20 dominated place, the Bay City Rollers, in those ancient times, the teeny bopper rage, where Walker suggested musical garbage, told callers put out by his views to take a running jump. Well, he wasn't Irish, but sorry, yes. Anyway, he went to California, tried the radio there, etc., etc. But what he did like...
Yes?
I know that one of the bands he particularly liked, and this seems to tie in with his view of music and that gap between himself and some of his listeners, was Steely Dan.
Oh, interesting.
Thank you.
Aretha Franklin. She don't remember Queen of Soul. It's hard times befallen the soul survivors. She thinks I'm crazy, but I'm just growing old.
We were talking about Johnny Walker, the late Johnny Walker, because I said his taste ran to the bands such as Fleetwood Mac, Steely Dan, Steve Harley's Cockney Rebels. So he got into trouble several times. He got sacked once from BBC's Greater London Radio for suggesting that the ousting of the Prime Minister, Margaret Thatcher, would have people dancing in the streets.
Hmm.
Gave the heat for that. Trouble with the law, cocaine as well. Came back to work, and I guess what he was best known for was a particular show, Sounds of the 70s. We don't do a lot of the 70s. But anyways, he was an advisor to the Richard Curtis film. Do you remember this? The Boat That Rocked. An attempt to recapture the pirate radio era.
Yeah, I remember that.
At 6:21. All right, then, Carol McKibben.
Yes.
You sit there, guard the fort.
Yes.
And I am standing on my chair now. Just reaching up above my head, the cupboard door.
That's it, Ron. You can do it.
I may be gone sometime.
It doesn't. In June of 1925, Dayton, Tennessee, nestled in the foothills of the Cumberlands, was a sleepy, obscure little town of 5,000. But by mid-July, it was a gaudy midway of lemonade stands, souvenir hawkers, telegraph-sending stations, and had swollen to three times its normal size. It all revolved about a new state law, which outlawed the teaching of evolution.
Be it enacted by the General Assembly of the State of Tennessee that it shall be unlawful to teach any theory that denies the story of the divine creation of man, and to teach instead that man has descended from a lower order of animals.
Scopes himself was quite secondary to the trial. A rather personable young schoolteacher, he purposely created the issue by lecturing to his class on evolution. The stage was set. Scopes was arrested, indicted, and brought to trial. Then to Dayton came the two real protagonists. To prosecute, elder statesman, three-time presidential candidate, William Jennings Bryan.
I am here to protect the word of God from the greatest atheist and agnostic in the United States.
For the defense, the highly successful criminal lawyer, Clarence Darrow.
If today you can take a thing like evolution and make it a crime to teach in the public schools, then at the next session you may ban books and newspapers. Soon you may set Catholic against Protestant, and then Protestant against Protestant.
Bryan believed it was strictly a battle between religion and atheism. Darrow insisted it was a fight between a literal translation of the Bible and a common sense one. There were many supporters from all faiths on both sides. The climax occurred when the defense called Bryan himself to be a witness.
Now, Mr. Bryan, let me ask you if you take the Bible literally. For example, do you really believe that Jonah was swallowed by a whale?
Yes, I believe that. But it was a fish, not a whale.
Was this a mine run of fish or made specially for the purpose?
I am not prepared to say.
Well, do you think that the Lord purposefully made a fish big enough to swallow Jonah?
I do. One miracle is just as easy to believe as another. A God who can make a whale can make a man and make both do what he pleases.
The tiny courtroom, bursting with the press and spectators, sweltered in the impartial heat. And finally, the judge moved the trial out on the shaded lawn, where Bryan and Darrow, in shirt sleeves and galluses, continued their duel.
Mr. Bryan, do you believe literally the story of Eve?
I do.
And the story of the temptation of Eve by the serpent?
Yes.
And that God made the serpent crawl on his belly for eternity because of his participation in the temptation?
That is my belief.
And how, sir, do you suppose that the snake got along before that?
Your Honor, may I say that the only reason Mr. Darrow has in being here is to slur at the Bible. I want the world to know that this man, who does not believe in a God, is trying to use a court in Tennessee...
I object to that, Your Honor.
...to slur at the Bible.
I object to your statement. I'm examining you on your fool ideas that no intelligent Christian on earth believes.
What is it, Jerry?
Scopes was found guilty and fined $100, which the Baltimore Sun paid. It was a humiliating final hour for the great commoner. In less than a week, he died. Dempsey had fought them all. Willard, Firpo, Carpentier. Now in the ring of the Sesquicentennial Stadium in Philadelphia, Father Time and a master boxer named Tunney had caught up with the perfect fighting machine, which was William Harrison Dempsey. As he stood there in the warm rain, his face battered, swollen, and purple, he met fame halfway and for the first time gave his followers something to love him for.
Tunney, I guess I just forgot to duck.
A year later, Dempsey crawled into the ring for the return match with the new champion. It was Dempsey's last fight, Tex Rickard's biggest gate, and a $1 million purse for Tunney.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience. This is Graham McNamee speaking from NBC.
Most people remember Graham McNamee's description of that famous seventh round.
He's coming out there, leading up. He comes into Tunney with both hands. Uh-oh, doesn't do any depth. As they come out of the clinch, Tunney's right catches Dempsey on the face. Then Tunney shoots a hard left to Dempsey. Dean follows that up with more left to Jack's jaw. And Dempsey comes back with a hard right to Tunney's face. Gene caught that, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, Dempsey comes on through with a terrific right. He's got Tunney against the ropes. There's another right landing on the champion's jaw. A barrage of left and right, and Tunney is down! Tunney's down! Dempsey's out from the other side, and the referee has not yet begun to count. He has not. 9, 5, 6, 7. Dempsey's waiting for him. 8. Tunney's up. Tunney's up on 9. The fight's continuing. Tunney's backing away. He's backpedaling. He looks a little groggy. Dempsey's coming in, trying to get to him, but he's backpedaling. He tries a long left. It doesn't
matter. Dempsey, with victory only seconds away, neglected to go to a neutral corner. The referee, in delaying the count, gave Tunney 4 revitalizing seconds. Tunney managed to stay on his feet, wore his panting pursuer to a frazzle, outboxed him, and at the final bell remained the heavyweight champion of the world.
It doesn't.
I am ancient radio waves. Dempsey and Tunney, the long count, as it was called.
Right.
Much pummeling going on there. The voice of Edward R. Murrow. I can hear it now. Recreated broadcast, along with authentic footage there, I think, too, as well, from 1919, 1932, something he did at 6:28. Carol McKibben, looking at today's Winnipeg Free Press, the book pages.
Yes.
I mentioned Words of Wisdom, first half of 2025, offering plenty in the way of thought-provoking titles, says book page editor Ben Sigurdsson, Pope Francis, with a book called, not surprising, Hope. David A. Robertson, new book called All the Little Monsters, great success story out of Winnipeg. Scott Oak, For the Love of a Son. So that would be a nonfiction, I'm thinking, yes.
Yeah.
Bill Gates, Source Code. Joe Nesbo, so probably a new mystery there, Blood Ties. There's 2 pages on this, along with other, but I see Mark Carney, new book, as well as Stephen King. Now, a new fiction book, and you thought maybe we weren't going to see any more Stephen King.
I thought I'd heard something, but...
Well, he brings back beloved character, Holly Gibney, in a book called Never Flinch, and these all have dates on them as well, when they're expected to be released. So May 27 for that. What about that Scott Oak? See if I can find a book proper. For Love of a Son, due January 21st.
Okay.
For Love of a Son,
coming
a memoir,
up very soon.
A memoir of addiction, loss, and hope. Now, as well, the Winnipeg Free Press, I'm scrolling back here. 2-page spread and a lovely couple of photographs here. That's QWERTY collection. QWERTY.
Oh,
instead of
yes.
Quality. QWERTY, because?
That's the part of the top row of the typewriter.
Yes, but we're
the
talking...
The regular keyboard.
Old typewriters. Analog aficionado, keen to collate her cache of vintage manual typewriters. It's written by David Sanderson. Cora Enns, who says she would like to shout out to Mrs. Povey, her former typewriting instructor at Springfield Collegiate Institute in Oak Bank. She's a music teacher, actually, at Ecole Dugald School. She says her hobby, collecting vintage manual typewriters. And Mrs. Povey helped foster her fascination with the utilitarian device. And she saw the movie. Now, have you ever seen this? California Typewriter, 2016 documentary film. Explores the world of typewriters, Tom Hanks, musician John Mayer, playwright Sam Shepard, I guess, who collected them, used them.
Right, yeah, and Tom Hanks collects them
right.
as well. And there's a picture of a Canadian-made Horton typewriter, which is quite unusual-looking thing.
Well, they did go through some changes, but the heart of it was
yes.
it had to weigh a ton.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Thank you.
Heyman in his orchestra.
Yep.
From a Naxos CD called Waltzing Cat. It's all Leroy Anderson goodies there. Now, yes. did you have a typewriter?
I didn't have a typewriter, but my mom had a portable typewriter that weighed 150 pounds.
That was portable in those days, Gerald.
Yes,
portable.
I know.
You needed someone
and
beside you to carry.
And you needed muscles in your fingers to use those things.
Oh, to pound the keys?
Yes.
My mama's was an Underwood.
Yes.
And you know, you get the name across the top. It must have been a decal or something, and it stood out, never wore out.
Yes, probably gold, right?
Yeah, around the edgings.
Yeah.
And of course, it had ribbon.
Oh, yes, ribbon.
Across, yes.
Yes, and you had to change the ribbon every once in a while. Oh, my goodness.
I used to bang out things for CBC on that.
Yes.
And I can remember we always used yellow paper. It's an old radio newspaper thing, I guess. And
I think my mom, carbon copies, she used sort of an onion skin paper, very thin.
And carbon paper. You had to have carbon paper to keep it.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You had carbon paper.
By the way, I have all these things. We'll have to leave these
to
the archives.
Kids these days, right? When you are leaving a CC or a BCC, that's a carbon copy, and that's where it comes from. You actually had a piece of paper that had carbon on it that
made a copy.
And a blind carbon copy. Yeah, that's what those stand for, and that's what they are from.
And that ends today's lesson of technology that used to be.
Yes, and I think my mom could type, when she was probably at her height, 90 words a minute on that thing.
Was that decent?
Yes.
90 a minute, yes, of course.
Yes, 60 words a minute is decent.
Well, it's a nice piece anyways. Two pages with some nice photos. Today's Free Press page, I think it's F7 and F8.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. 6:34. Turning now then to help and advice, because we're not just a pretty sound in the air. Your problem solved, dear Mary, from the pages of the Spectator. And if it was true in 2008, I'm sure, Mary, it's still true today.
I'm sure.
Question
yes.
for dear Mary. Question.
Yes.
I am approaching my 50th birthday, and I want to have a party for around 100 people. There's an ideal space near where we live in London. It belongs to a friend who has kindly offered to us for free, but it's only really suitable for 100 people. Since we cannot afford to have more than 100, this suits us fine. Now, having finished compiling my must-invite list, I see it exceeds 180 people. There's no way I can prune this list without causing grave offense. What can I do, Mary? Signed, CB, London, W12. Mary, of course, has an answer. Just ensure you have your party on a Saturday night, preferably to coincide with the boarding school exit weekend. Since most people in their 50s live in the country or go there at weekends, you can be sure that a large proportion of your friends will be unable or unwilling to attend a party held in London on a Saturday night. You can still ask all 180 and have the credit for it, but by holding the party on a Saturday night, you will find the list will be self-pruning.
Good luck with that.
Always got something wise to say, although I wouldn't have wanted to have been at that
soiree
when you saw the numbers that showed up.
Yeah.
Say, I'm rooting through the basement. Water got at this, but it hasn't affected the LP, I don't think. We got a variety of Lenny Bro, but I did like this, Quietude. Not a lot of date on this. And it looks like there must be an interview with Lenny Bro somewhere on it. But I thought we'd play some music.
Okay.
The man, the legend.
Yes.
The guitar.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Quietude.
Very nice. Very quiet.
Quiet and blue.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, the back notes are just broken little individual references. Hello. Lost all my sound. All right. Best guitar in the world, etc. But I was looking to see who he was playing with. Oh, here we are. He had Dave Young, acoustic bass. Digitally recorded by Ted O'Reilly at Bourbon Street in Toronto, June the 14th, 1983. It is 6:40. And looking at the Turner Classic Movie Channel.
Yes.
11 a.m. this morning. Pal Joey from 1957. Directed by George Sidney. Frank Sinatra, Rita Hayworth, Kim Novak. From the play, although Gene Kelly played it on stage. So they made it a... he was a dancer in that, of course. So a little different for Frank. And the stage play had a really nasty ending to it, but they brightened it up, don't you know, for the movie. And this is from Pal Joey.
After one whole quart of brandy, like a daisy I awake, with no promo sales or handy, a new sensation. I've done pretty well, I think, but this half-pint imitation put me on the blink. I'm wild again, beguiled again, a simpering, whimpering child again, sleep where I shouldn't sleep, bewitched, bothered, and bewildered am I. Lost my heart, but what of it? My mistake, I agree. He's a laugh, but I love it, because the laugh's on me. A pill he is, but still he is all mine, and I'll keep him until he is bewitched, bothered, and bewildered like me. Seen a lot, I mean a lot, but now I'm like sweet 17 a lot. Bewitched, bothered, and bewildered. the trousers that cling to him. Bewitched, bothered, and bewildered am I. When he talks, he is seeking words to get off his chest. Horizontally speaking, he's at his very best. Vexed again, perplexed again, thank God I can be oversexed again. Bewitched, bothered, and bewildered am I.
Now that is from the Broadway production of Pal Joey. So that was Vivian Segal. From 1950, as I say, he's a struggling singer, he's a love rat.
What?
Played by Gene Kelly in the original, then Frank Sinatra in the movie. At 6:44.
Yes.
I think it's time to say thank you for the Christmas cards that are starting to roll in.
Yes.
And I'd like to thank Dale. We received his card again.
Yes.
For this year. So we're setting up a little shrine in one corner. We'll be charging admission to come by and see Dale's Christmas cards from over the years.
Sure.
I think there's money to be made that far off. Since he never takes my advice about velvet paintings or cats. Cats with big eyes. People love it. People love it.
Yes.
Although that example, I think the woman who actually did those paintings, her husband claimed credit. Do you remember that?
Yeah. They made a whole movie out of it.
Oh, Get Out.
They had children with gigantic eyes, I think she
and
made.
Lovely stamp on this as well, Westminster Beauty.
Right. Yes.
So thank you, Dale and Janet, for the card received.
Yes.
Yes. And we sent out something electronic, did we not?
Yes, we did, because it was like the middle of December, maybe not even the middle of December, but the postie talks had fallen off, and it seemed like we weren't going to get any service in December at that point.
All we were getting was, I hate you, Shane.
That's right.
Remember the movie? Yeah.
So I thought, that's it. I'm sending out an electronic version, which I have to apologize, but that's the best I could do under the circumstances at the time.
6:45.
Yes. But we were talking about movies.
Right.
And there's a theater section here at the University of Winnipeg, and they do film studies there, and they have an editing room, which they have now renamed.
From the editing room to the Howard Curl.
That's right.
Because of all the years that he taught here.
Yes.
And the quality work that he offered.
Yes, and the high regard that the students have. Like, if you were at his
Memorial service.
Memorial service. Yeah, that's what they call it. Yes, very high esteem. Good on him.
Lovely little piece in the Uniter, the magazine here, the newspaper from University of Winnipeg by the editor, who tried to throw Howard with, what about this particular area of the world? And Howard came right back with,
he knew them all.
Yes,
yeah.
Dope. Yes, at 6:46.
Yeah, it was very fun.
Right, well, we talked about, did we not? We talked about Dale and Janet. Thank you for the card.
Yes.
And so I'm just thinking.
Yes.
I know they like this duo's comedy. So it's time for comedy. So there we are.
Now we should have a little sports talk. We haven't done that for quite a while.
A little sports music.
Hi, sports fans. This is Biff Burns in the sports room. And today we're welcoming a great hero of the game of baseball, a fellow who's had some 29 years in the sport. He's finally retiring, and I speak, of course, of Stuffy Hodgson. Stuffy, welcome to the sports room. How do you feel?
Well, I feel pretty sad, naturally, Biff, realizing that this is the last day. Pretty sad.
Well, that's a pretty normal way to feel, but still in all, looking back over this long career of yours, you got to admit the game has been pretty good to you.
Well, not as good to me as some of these young punks that are coming along.
Well, I detect a note of rancor there. What do you mean, exactly?
Well, when I first came up to the big leagues, Playing the game was everything. Sure, you got paid for it, but now all these young guys think about it. Big salaries, and big homes, and big cars, and vintage wine, and beautiful women, and making TV commercials, and sleeping late in the morning.
Looks like guys like you went wrong somewhere along the line.
I don't know, and these young guys, they all have these little radios going in the locker room all the time, playing a bunch of noise. Now, I don't understand that kind of music. Whatever happened to the songs that Pat Boone and Kate Smith sang? I mean, those guys sang real songs.
I guess so. I don't know much about music.
And here they're always kidding around. Now, they loosen the spikes on my shoes, you know? So I run wobbly.
Oh, that's nice.
And they put cheese up here on the band of my cap.
Wow.
It took me till August to track that smell down.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's really
terrible.
I hit
the other day, they dumped a pail of water on me and the sports writer back there. Well, you know, I like a joke like the next guy, but you go too far.
Yeah, I think I read something about that. You know, looking back, it's good to see that after all of these years and the ups and downs, you've managed to retain your sense of humor. I think
you got it.
I know that you're one of the most important speakers on the sports banquet circuit. I guess you could go out and appear at those things five, six nights a week if you wanted to. Give us one of the stories that you tell at those affairs that
sure.
go over so well.
Well, when I first came up to the big leagues, I was just a kid, of course. And my first time at bat, I'll never forget. They had the big guy out in the mound, the big left-hander. Do you remember him?
I remember him well.
Well, he was throwing real smoke that day. I couldn't see the ball. And the umpire behind the plate was a great big guy. Do you remember him?
No, I don't remember.
Well, anyway, the third strike goes by me, and the umpire says, "You're out." So I was nervous, and it was the first time up. I took my bat, and I threw it straight up in the air. And the umpire, he took off his mask, and he came over to me, and he says, "Young man," I was a young man then, he says, "Young man, if that bat comes down, you're out of the game." Let's see. That's the anecdote.
Yeah. No wonder you're so much in demand at those groups. You know, I know that you also developed a reputation for not looking after what you ate or drank or how much. Still in all, you seem to be in pretty good physical condition. How do you account for that stuff?
Well, I wouldn't buy any stock in what you just said.
You wouldn't?
No, the worst thing to happen in this game is this artificial turf. You know, it's like playing the game on a billiard table. You're back there to make a play. The ball takes these crazy hops, jumps up and hits you here in the clavicle. Now, you got to dig in and play it. If you're going to win this game, you got to dig in. You got to make that play. And that goes for both teams, irreversible.
Stuffy, do you think now they're going to retire your number?
No, they got some young punk wearing it out there now.
Well, I see the mayor and Whitey Ford and George Burns coming into the dugout for the retirement ceremony, so I'll just say thanks a lot and wish you a lot of luck. And this is Biff Burns in the sports room saying until next time, this is Biff Burns saying so long. Today, we announce Bob and Ray final clearance, a closeout, absolute clearance sale.
We are being forced, to vacate our premises. Our lease has been foreclosed.
Our landlord says we must go, and his ultimatum is your good luck.
Now, we have to get rid of every last piece of our tremendous stock at ridiculous sacrifice.
Now, because we must go, you can buy men's two-pants suits for $16.50. Men's three-pant suits for $17.50, and men's four-pant suits for $18.59.
And men's all-pant suits for $19.50. Now, you can get men's complete winter overcoats at $22.50, and men's winter overcoats without sleeves for $17.50.
Our lease is up, and you get the benefit. Men's winter underwear with long legs and long sleeves for $1.75. An extra pair of legs for only 38 cents.
Yes, the landlord says vacate, and that's it. What?
Us?
Hello? Yes. What? We can? Darn it.
What's the matter?
The landlord says we can stay another year.
Thank you, boys. Bob and Ray from The best of Bob and Ray at 6:53.
Brilliant.
Carol McKibben, I want to finish with the Turner Classic Movie Channel because Paddington played that song from Pal Joey at 11 a.m. this morning, then at 7 o'clock tonight, Faces, and then at 9:15, Shadows. These are two movies by John Cassavetes, directed by John Cassavetes.
Oh, all right.
Dark, gray, black and white. Yes. Intense. 11:45 tonight, Suspense from 1946, Barry Sullivan, Bunny de Granville. This is, of course, repeated Sunday at 9 a.m., so it's part of Noir Alley. Sunday, 1 a.m., Barry Lyndon, great carrying on. Ryan O'Neill is in 18th Century Rogue from 1975, directed by Stanley Kubrick. 7:45, Sunday night, The Legend of Lila Clare, directed by Robert Aldrich, I think, yes. 1968, Kim Novak, Peter Finch, Ernest Borgnine, Unpleasant, yes. Then Sunday at 7 and 8:15, Mystery Movie starring Edna May Oliver. Do you remember Edna May?
Of course.
Why the long face, Edna May? Oh, exactly. Yes.
Very bad.
1942. She played the spinster sleuth Hildegard Withers. They did three, I think, and viewed as the definitive Hildegard before somebody else took it over. We remember best, I guess, for A Tale of Two Cities. Do you remember she wrestles with Madame Defarge there on the on the floor? Yes.
Yeah. Wasn't she in one of the Pride and Prejudice?
Little Women. She played Aunt March.
Oh, Aunt March.
Yes, of course. Yeah. And you're right. Well, a number of other movies you could look her up.
Yes,
Edna May Oliver getting the attention she deserves then. And that's Sunday night, 7 p.m., 8:15, and 9:45. That, I guess, they're showing all three. 6:54.
Hey, I'm Alan Doyle, author of A Newfoundlander in Canada, and you're listening to CKUWFM 95.9.
Right, you are. All right. Died on this day in 2001. Les Brown, I know you can't say that without saying, and his band of renown. I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were expecting. And
but
I said
this is Les Brown and his orchestra.
Yes.
Yeah.
So from Drifting and Dreaming, Themes of the Big Bands, in this case, Leapfrog. Orchestra from the CD, Drifting and Dreaming, Themes of the Big Bands, Volume 2. Philadelphia-born saxophonist, clarinetist, songwriter. And, as I say, his band of renown. Number, incidentally, only been more famously associated with less than his own million-selling U.S. number one composition, Sentimental Journey, which he recorded with Doris Day. It is 6:58. Coming up, 7 o'clock, next half hour, Children's Quarter. Wake them, shake them.
Okay.
Give them a little something. Classical music for them. Gerald Rafferty, founding member of Steeler's Wheel.
Ah.
Stuck in the Middle with You.
Yes.
1973. Solo hits. Late 1970s. Right Down the Line, Night Owl. And this.